Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I am Pat Boyle, joined this week by Charlie Romeliotis and Slavko Bekovic. Guys, how you doing?
Doing good.
Not too bad.
We are all about the draft in this week's podcast. Of course, it starts next week, Friday, June 22nd in Dallas. Charlie, you and I will be there. We will have a podcast Friday night after the first round. Hawks have that 8th overall selection and the 27th. Before we get your guys' thoughts on what the Hawks may do in the first round, we kick off this week's podcast with my interview with Vice President of Amateur Scouting, Mark Kelly. And my first question to Mark, how does this draft grade out overall?
I think it's a very good draft in terms of elite talent. I think you have Dahlin. I think you have a few more defensemen that can be impactful players. And I think there's a handful of forwards who can be impactful players.
Is there a position in this draft that is exceptionally deep?
I think it's deep for defensemen, but I think it's deep with forwards, with wingers, too.
Okay. Well, obviously, defensemen was a priority last draft for the Blackhawks. I think at last count, 15 Blackhawks defensemen under NHL contract for next year. 4 are right-handed shots. Yoki Haru would make it 5 if he made the team. What does the class look like as far as right-handed shooting defensemen?
There's a good class of defensemen shooting right-handed, and that's augmented by the left-handed shots too. But the right-handed shots. There aren't as many right-handed shot players in hockey, but this year's draft with defensemen has a good assortment.
Mark, we've seen in years past, obviously with where the Hawks have drafted, you guys have been able to trade back down and still grab a desired player like you did last year with Henry Yoki Haru. Is there consideration of moving up from the 8th spot and possibly – would you possibly package the 27 as part of that plan?
At this point, it's hard to say what you would package together. You don't know what the cost would be. But I think that we will go into the weeks leading up to the draft with an open mind. I think it's going to be tough to move up in this draft, move up significantly.
Like, when you look at, you said it's a good group as far as elite talent goes. Some of the other leagues will say, from 7 down, it's a little different. There's maybe 7 game-changing type players. Is there a number where you think, like, is it top 5? Is it top 10? Is it top 15 where these difference-making, organizationally difference-making players exist in this draft?
Well, I think you're looking at the very top, maybe the top 2 spots in the draft, where you're looking at a player that can go in and alter the landscape of an organization. After that, I think that what you're looking for is players that can come in and impact a team. And I think that's really what it is. I think a draft at first has players that can, that can alter a franchise. And then the next thing you want is players that can come in and impact a team, not just be on a team.
Yeah, and that speaks to kind of where this franchise is at right now, with the core, with that window closing for them to a degree. NHL-ready player seems to be something that you guys are desiring. When you hear Oliver Wahlstrom came out and said he's going to play the 18-19 season in college, you know, he's a player that could be there for the Hawks at 8. Not specifically him, but does that have an impact when deciding who you're going to draft? Are you guys leaning as an organization to NHL ready over somebody who is, say, going to be committed to college?
No, I think the way we would evaluate it is, I think we project them. We try to get a timeline on when we think they might be NHL ready. But we're looking for where they are on the development curve and what their ceiling is. And I think in some players, you have to be a little bit more patient for them to reach their ceiling. That doesn't necessarily mean that players can exceed their development curve. I mean, I think we saw that with Alex DeBrincat last year.
The other thing we see, too, is the transition from the large ice overseas to the North American game. And is that one of the toughest things to when it comes to scouting, trying to project how, let's say, a defenseman is going to play on a smaller ice or adapt his game to less time and less space to make crucial decisions?
Well, that definitely that plays into it. Any time we can see these international players playing in North America or on a smaller sheet, that's beneficial for us. Some of the countries over there, some of the buildings are really more of a hybrid side, so they're actually between an Olympic and an NHL. So we look to see if we can catch the players playing in those buildings also.
And, Stan Bowman said on draft lottery night that position doesn't matter at 8. What do you look for in a player when deciding between best available and the position they play if it's close and somehow, the need for the organization is this?
Well, I think what we're really going to be looking for is the player that can make the most impact on the organization in the long run. If we need a little bit of time to let the player develop, I think, we're comfortable with that. But where we're drafting, what we're going to be looking for is, really the who would be the best player regardless of position and really regardless of the timeline.
Right. What's your thoughts on Henry Jokiharju's development, and do you believe he's got a shot at playing to start this season in the NHL?
Well, I think Henry had a fantastic year out west, and then in the spring he went over. He played, I think, close to 8 or 9 games with the Finnish national team before the World Championships, and I think he opened a lot of eyes with the way he played with the national team. I think if Henry has a really good summer training, comes into camp, I certainly think he gets a good look.
Well, that sounds really encouraging. Obviously, the blue line is a top priority this year, as well as backing up Corey Crawford. You guys signed Kevin Lankinen this past week. How does this draft look as far as goaltenders?
There's no goaltender. I don't think there's going to be a goaltender taken in the first round. I suspect a goaltender will crack the second round, and I think we're going to see a run in the late second or into the third round. I think that's when the goaltenders are going to start to go. Nobody has set themselves up this year as being a sure type thing in the goaltending position. So I think there's some good value in goaltenders as we go through the draft. And one of the things we'll look at there is the goaltender, where he's going to play, and just what kind of a development track he would be on.
You mentioned at the top how this is a deep draft at winger. One thing we see is, these players put up these crazy numbers, whether it's in junior, whether it's in college, you name it, overseas. And then they come to the NHL. Obviously, things change. time and space. But the other part of the equation is edge, willingness to go to the tough areas. When it comes to your evaluation and all the scouts, how much of an emphasis or how are you able to truly grade in that area when, you know, every level doesn't have, obviously, the tough areas like the NHL does?
Well, but every level has its own tough area relative to itself. So one of the things we do is we track players. We like to see, you know, where they're scoring from. And that'll give you an indication how willing they are.
And is there are a few guys in this draft that that have that characteristic that you guys have seen as you guys put together your draft board?
Oh, definitely. There's certain players that stand out to us for their willingness to get to the front of the net and, you know, to play along the boards and play behind the net.
My thanks to Mark Kelly. I'm joined again by Charlie and Slavko. Boys, what did you take away from the conversation with Mark Kelly?
Yeah, he didn't show his hand too much, so you can't
that's
really.
That's a savvy veteran move.
Straight laced. Savvy veteran move. But I did think it was noteworthy when we asked or when you asked whether the Blackhawks would consider trading up, and he didn't deny it nor say we'll explore it, but he did say it's going to be difficult to trade up significantly in this draft. So he did kind of leave the door open that like they might. They could move up potentially a few spots if they want to get the guy, but I don't see a move where they would significantly move up maybe to the 2 or 3 spot or maybe even 4 for, with Ottawa.
So what would significant be to you? 8 to 5?
I would say
2 or 3?
I would say significant to me means in the 2 to 4 range, maybe 5. But 5 seems doable because it sounds like Arizona might be willing to explore that trade.
But and you've said for a while now, Carolina is such a wild card.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what their new owner wants to do, what direction that franchise wants to go in general. So do they pick a guy and go, all right, this is our guy for the next decade that we're going to kind of build our franchise around, assuming maybe that they don't stay in Carolina? Or do they trade out and, you know, just ship off all of the other pieces? You know, we've heard some rumors already about Darling and Justin Falk, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty more rumors coming up as we get closer to the draft. The thing that stood out to me most, it was actually two things. One was surprising. One was not. What wasn't surprising was that he said pretty explicitly, we're going to look at guys who are willing to get to the net, play along the boards. Those are going to be forwards that we consider a little bit higher or value a little bit more because that's what they've lacked since Andrew Shaw left, really, for the mm-hmm. Hawks. What surprised me was him saying, yeah, pretty much anyone's going to say we want to go best overall player when you get to that pick. But him saying they're okay with someone who might take a couple years to make the NHL was a bit surprising to me because I would have thought guys like Adam Boqvist, who's probably 2 or 3 years away, or now that we know that Wahlstrom might not be playing right off the bat.
Going to BC.
Right. So that might, in theory, go, all right, well, the Hawks are probably going to avoid guys like that. If they're there and they still think they're best of overall, that's going to be the pick.
Yeah, again, like you said, he played a great poker hand. He kind of left everything open. I was shocked by that because, to me, with the core where it's at right now, with the fact that they didn't make the playoffs last year, that it's been 2 one-and-dones, and that window's closing, I think they want NHL ready. But, again, Kelly left the door open to that. So, let me just ask you this to start things off, and that not just moving up from 8. Let's just say dealing the 8th overall pick or the 27th. Do you see that as a likelihood for this team next week?
I think it's more likelihood that the 27th pick is moved rather than the 8th. Okay. And I'm not sure how I feel about attaching the 27 to the 8 to move up a few spots. I kind of like the idea of just picking the best available at number 8 and then see what you can do with 27. You know, if you do trade the 8, you would have to get someone like, you know, you would have to get an immediate player. Like Justin Falk has been linked to Chicago, but he's only got 2 years left on his contract. So it's like you'd be trading the number 8 overall pick for, you know, obviously a right-handed shot defenseman, a top 4 guy, but you only get 2 years of him, and you know, so it would have to be something.
But it's a reasonable deal.
It's a reasonable deal. Yeah, I just
kind of buying him low off of last season, and you know, we assume in 2 years the cap will continue to get better, as it is better now than it was a year and 2 years ago for the Hawks.
Right.
So I know what you're saying, but like, to me, top priority number one, Slavko, is a top four defenseman to elevate everybody's game. And to get somebody who's NHL ready, you got to give up something.
Right.
And that might take that eighth overall pick. You know, boy, they haven't picked this high since Kane's draft,
right.
But they might have to.
You've got to think nothing's off the table for them.
Right.
If someone comes up and says, hey, we want the number eight pick, we're going to give you this NHL ready player under the age of, you know, 28, who's under, you know, a decent contract, they pretty much have to say yes with where this team is, because that's more valuable to them than whatever they're going to get at number eight, unless they really think someone's going to fall to them there that is going to be NHL ready come October and is going to be a contributor, not just someone who can play, but someone who's going to contribute right away, whether that's top six forward who can score or a top four D-man. To project a defenseman, no matter who it is, if it's Noah Dobson or whoever is available at eight, if they pick that D-man, it's going to be really tough for them to crack the lineup day one and be a quality NHL player. As you know, it obviously takes a lot longer for defensemen to prepare to play in the NHL, especially coming from juniors or overseas. You're playing against much stronger, much faster players, much smarter players.
Smaller ice surface.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's a lot to get used to. Forwards can come in and they can score. If you can score, you can score. And if you play on a line with, oh, I don't know, a Patrick Kane, you're going to get set up for some pretty easy goals. That's a little bit different. But to get a defenseman at number eight that we think is going to play 18 minutes of ice time right off the bat and, you know, contribute on special teams, that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, and sorry, really quick. To clarify, I don't, like, immediately if you want to trade the number eight pick, like, I'm totally okay with it. Only if it's, like, a guy like Jacob Trouba or Noah Hanifin where they're young and you can sign them to a long-term
yes,
deal.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Justin
right.
Falk for the eight pick or whatever, however you want to work. Like, that's too risky to me, because then you're literally saying this year and next year and that's it.
Yeah. Right. Right. No, I'm with you guys. Look, so let's get back to the draft here. And the only thing I think we know for sure, Buffalo is going to take Rasmus Dahlin for sure. Carolina, we said, is a wild card, but it seems like Andrei Svechnikov is the consensus number two. And then the draft starts at three with
Montreal.
And
they're just as much of a wild card.
They're a wild card with a lot of rumors of Pacioretty and the whole nine yards. And Mark Bergevin, of course, who was here with the Hawks, running the show there. Let's look at the D-men that could be available at eight. Evan Bouchard, 6'2", 193-pounder. Noah Dobson, we had mentioned, a righty shot out of Prince Edward Island. We've got Quinn Hughes, the lefty shot out of Michigan. And Boqvist, Adam Boqvist, 5'11", 168, a Swedish D-man. He's a righty shot. In this group, who do you like? Who could be a possible fit?
Okay, so I'll run through those four names. Evan Bouchard, I think he's the most NHL ready out of the four.
Agreed.
But I don't think he has the highest upside. So if those four guys, I would prefer Quinn Hughes, but I don't think the Blackhawks would go in that direction, because it's another undersized defenseman and they have that in Henry Jokiharju, unless, you know, they plan on trading Jokiharju for a top four defenseman and they can be more patient with Quinn Hughes, whatever. I like Quinn Hughes out of the group, but if the Blackhawks' goal is to try to get the best NHL defenseman who can step in as soon as possible, I would go Evan Bouchard.
Bouchard is probably, like you said, he'll be the one that's most ready day one. He's already going to be an asset on the power play. He's, of the four guys, he's the most ready power play quarterback, so to speak, the guy that you can probably put on your second unit right off the bat and be comfortable with. He led all OHL defensemen in points. He's got a good shot. He's got great vision. He's not the fastest skater. He's not the strongest guy, but he's got good size at 6'2", 195. He can still fill out a little bit. But he comes from London, which is a team that has a pedigree of winning.
Patrick Kane.
That's right. So, and they made a lot of trades midseason, and he spoke about that at the combine, basically saying it was like having two different seasons within one season. Bouchard is probably the most ready. Dobson, I think, has the highest ceiling because he's got size, he's got offensive ability. He won the Memorial Cup in the QMJHL. At 6'3", about 180, still got a lot of room to fill out, too. Good shot. Again, good awareness. Another power play asset. Hughes, man, he's the best skater, I think, out of all the defensemen, and that includes Dahlin. I mean, he's really smooth with the puck, but 5'10", like you said, with Joki Haru, and it's a big question. I don't know if any of these guys are really ready to play day one. I think Bouchard has the best chance. I think Boqvist is out of the question to me if you're the Hawks because he's still 2 or 3 years away. He might have the highest ceiling, though. He is nasty offensively, really fast, great shot. He's played with Dahlin pretty much his entire career coming up with Sweden, but another undersized guy. I mean, offensively, though, he's got the entire package.
I like what you guys were talking about as far as Bouchard coming out of the OHL. It has been to me, the most, you know, I don't say sure bet, but NHL ready. The guys that we've seen come out of there seem to perform at a high level, and it's not as hit or miss as maybe what we see from the college player. You guys watched take a look at all the mock drafts that I've been looking at. A lot of these guys are gone in the various mock drafts before 8, so we'll even see if that's even a possibility. But Bouchard seems to be, you know, obviously that would be the, like you said, the most NHL ready and would be the dream pick. I just don't think he's going to fall to 8.
Yeah, and it's tricky too because 3 of the 4 guys that we mentioned, 3 of those guys are right-handed shots. And they've already got Seabrook, Connor Murphy, Henry Yokiharu, all these guys that are coming up that are right-handed shots. And you can never have enough right-handed shot defensemen because there aren't a ton of quality ones in the NHL. But I still think you need to balance it out. And this is the problem with Quinn Hughes, too, is because he's undersized. And, you know, they need someone that can be a top-4 defenseman that can be a physical presence as well as being a puck mover and play on the PK, power play, whatever. But, yeah, like, if there's a defenseman there at 8, like, they're probably getting the 4th or 5th best one. And, like, it takes a while for a defenseman to develop.
But,
you know,
it's crazy because over the last week we've seen a number of forward. Now we're talking about potentially Brady Tkachuk being a top 5 pick or Kotkaniemi, the center out of Finland, who's skyrocketing up the draft charts. That means that somebody like Bouchard or Dobson is going to fall and be there for number 8 if the Hawks decide to stay there. I think Bouchard would probably be the first D-man off the board after Dahlin. Then it's kind of a crapshoot. I know the Hawks are supposed to be high on Dobson. They met with him after the combine privately outside of that. And we've heard him and Wahlstrom as kind of the top 2 guys if they stay at number 8. So I think with some of these forwards kind of jumping up in draft boards, you might end up having a pick of 2 out of the 3.
Yeah, and it's not out of the question either because Ivan Provorov and Miguel Sergachev and Charlie McAvoy, like all these guys are 20 or below, like,
right,
or 19.
And they're putting up points.
And they're putting up points. Like, so this is where we're headed in the NHL, where young defensemen are stepping in right away. So it's definitely not out of the question. But we know how Joel Quenneville is with his defensemen. He wants them to be defensively responsible, and that might take time.
I think that's why they want Dobson. I think Dobson is the most responsible in his own zone. He's got size. He's got a good reach. I mean, even if he's a little bit out of position or if guys skate by him, he can poke check. He can use his body to help some of that.
And that's a great point because, boy, the teams that were left standing in the Stanley Cup playoffs had size playing inside the dots. And other than Seabrook, who has lost a couple steps, we don't have a lot of physical players that can match up well. I mean, we saw Carlson get crushed. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's a different game in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it's while the Hawks don't play that physical style, it would be nice to have a body that would combat the tough, hard-nosed forward that you tend to see at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Right. I think you need both. Like, you need your puck movers, you need your guys that can create offense on the back end, but you know, you also need those, dare I say, Connor Murphy type players where they're hard to play against. And you know, maybe Connor Murphy isn't the best example, but you know, he's really the only guy that stands out to me as a physical presence aside from Brent Seabrook, but I kind of I think of him more as a third pairing guy now.
Yeah. And when you mention these young NHL defensemen who are putting up points at a young age, I think when you look at the Hawks, you almost think, well, maybe Duncan Keith, as he gets older, can become a guy who stays at home a little bit more and focuses more in his own zone, and then you pair him with a guy like Bouchard or Dobson.
Exactly. Hughes. And I think we saw that with Kempney too,
exactly,
right? You know, like, you don't just evaluate the defenseman or the player. You also have to look at who they're paired with. And I think last year they had so many fives and sixes that they were fives and sixes. It was if it was a two and a five, that may have worked. But there were too many, you know, third pair defensemen that were you were trying to run through there. Let's go to forwards quickly here. We mentioned Brady Tkachuk, Oliver Wahlstrom. Again, he's going to play at BC next year. And you heard Kelly say that, you know, they would be open to that if he's the best player available. Kokuniemi, how do you say
some of these names, man, are just so
bizarre. Yeah, well, I like that because, look, when you look at this organization right now, center is a position of need. And I like his size. Again, coming from Finland, you know, we'd have to make that adjustment to the smaller sheet. But your thoughts on some of the forwards that could be available at eight?
So my favorite of the group is probably Brady Tkachuk. And this is Slavko, I know you disagree.
He's a very polarizing guy.
well, I'll have you go after. But so this is interesting to me because I think Brady Tkachuk could easily go to four at Ottawa if Ottawa keeps the pick. But after that, I'm not like Arizona might move that pick. I'm not convinced that they'll keep it. And then 6-7 is Detroit, Vancouver, and I'm pretty sure they're going to go defenseman. So Brady Tkachuk goes from being like a potential top four pick to he could be there at eight for the Blackhawks. And if he is there at eight, I think it's a no-brainer. The second guy, maybe more realistically, would be Oliver Wahlstrom. But again, I need to read into this. But if he does it, because he already committed to BC, already committed for the next season, so he would have to sign an entry level deal at the end of his year. But there's no way the Blackhawks would burn it. You know, like they wouldn't burn the first of the entry level deal. But anyways, if he didn't go to college, would he be eligible to play in Rockford?
If he's,
what's the age?
You got to be 20, right?
Yeah, you've got to be 20, right? So yeah. Like, I don't even know. Like, it's either like Blackhawks or college, right? For Oliver, like,
I'm
what would you
sure,
have to
yeah,
do?
Yeah, those are the only two options. Yeah,
there, which is yeah. I need clarification on that.
He's obviously aged out of the U.S. development team, and it's either college. But like you said, if they let him go to BC and they go through whatever run and they sign him, you're getting him for 10 games at most at the end of the year. You would only burn that year unless you're desperate for some scoring and you're confident that he can come in and play right away. But the Hawks would also have to be in a position where they're expecting either to make a push for the Stanley Cup or they're just absolutely desperate for some kind of youth
right.
in general.
So basically what I'm getting at is at eight, they need an impact player, whether that's going to – like ideally that player would be in the Blackhawks system and then they could call him up whenever – you know, mid-season, whenever he's ready, and he can make an impact, kind of be that Vinny Hinostroza where you call him up mid-season. It's kind of like a trade deadline acquisition in and of itself. So, you know, ideally that would be that, you know, that would be, you know, if the Blackhawks can draft someone at eight, you know, that would be great. But Oliver Wahlstrom, like, I would not apologize if they drafted Oliver Wahlstrom.
He's got
upside.
Arguably the
sure.
best shot in this draft class. I mean, Svechnikov and Zadina are both there, but Wahlstrom, I mean, since Panarin left, the Hawks never really had that one-time threat, and Wahlstrom's like legit NHL-ready shot right off the bat. The BC thing, I wonder how that plays into what they expect out of him.
Yeah.
I think with Tkachuk, the draw is clearly a guy that has some finesse and playmaking, but he's the guy that grits it around the net. He's going to score the dirty goals. He'll play behind the net, and that's exactly what Mark Kelly said.
Yeah.
They're going to value guys who are willing to play that gritty game over maybe some other players, and especially I think if they expect Tkachuk to be able to come in and play right away at day one.
I just don't see Arizona letting the Scottsdale hometown guy Tkachuk. I just don't see them.
You're assuming the Coyotes know what they're doing.
Well, that's true too. They figured out that to sign Oliver Ekman-Larsson, which We wondered if that was going to happen or not. But
you mentioned Tkachuk going to Ottawa at four. I can't see them not taking a defenseman, knowing Carlson's on his way out.
Right.
And now with the whole Mike Hoffman thing that's going, I mean, yeah.
Listen, I have no idea.
They're a mess.
Then there's reports coming out saying we haven't even seen the worst, not maybe the worst of it, but like something else is going to come out of Ottawa in the next couple weeks, which is going to be crazy. But see, the thing I love about Tkachuk, though, is he's the kind of guy that the Blackhawks need, but he's not like, he's not just a gritty player. Like, he's a top six guy.
Oh, yeah, he's got good hands.
You know what I mean? Like, When you can check that many boxes with one player, that is a – because what do we always say? The Blackhawks need net front presence. Well, you know, they can go out and get a net front presence guy, but he's going to see, what, like 12 minutes of ice time because he's going to just sit in front of the power play. Like, Brady Tkachuk, he's the guy – I know he didn't score a lot of goals in college, but, like, he's
a
guy that can score.
Eight goals in a freshman season is a bit concerning.
And you put him on Brandon Saad and Jonathan Toews, who, like, had trouble scoring around the net this year – that line would be, you know.
And here's the thing. This is where the possibility of moving up from eight could really, I mean, you know, Tkachuk might not go past five, you know, but if you could move up two or three spots to land him, it's kind of, it doesn't happen very often in the NHL draft. So that's kind of, it'd be interesting. You know, you'd obviously have to package eight with a top prospect or a NHL roster player to try to move up that spot.
Don't you think, let's say you want to move up two or three spots, you give them eight and either a young defenseman like Gustafson or maybe even Hillman, if you're willing to trade out of that kind of depth and almost glut that you have now from four, you know, D-men 2 to 10, if you package one of those guys in eight, that probably gets you up at least a couple spots. But maybe teams are going to say, well, we know what you have, but we want a guy like Vinny Hinostroza.
Yeah, and yes, that's who they're going to ask.
Right, and are you willing to make that move to go get a question mark when you know what you've got in Hinostroza and you can get still a very good player at eight?
There's almost no untouchables in my world on that roster, although, like, Schmaltz, I mean, Kane is by far untouchable.
Right.
But of the young guys, Vinny's on that borderline. I think Schmaltz is untouchable, but Vinny, I'd listen if it was the right deal.
Right. Yeah, so I'm looking at Detroit and Vancouver are 6 and 7. I'm looking at the 3 to 5 range is just intriguing to me because it's Montreal, Ottawa, Arizona. I don't think the Blackhawks would trade with either of those three teams in fear of them taking the guy they want. I think the Blackhawks would trade up to 3, 4, or 5 because there's a threat of somebody else trading. Yeah.
Detroit
and
has similar
taking
needs.
Those guys. I don't think Detroit's going to trade. I think Detroit will just take the best available D. Although,
there's some rumors out of Detroit that they're willing to trade up, though, because
yeah,
I think they're
not
really high on Bouchard or Quinn Hughes keeping the in-state guy.
Yeah. I'm not sure Chicago would trade up to grab the defenseman. I think they would trade up to grab the forward they want to step in right now.
But the question being, there's other teams like Detroit that also want to trade up for a defenseman. So
right.
Is it even worth trading up if you know that I personally think Ottawa takes a D-man, I think Detroit takes a D-man, and Arizona a wild card? That means that you're going to have a forward that falls to you at eight.
Yep.
All right, so with all that said, I'm going to have you guys give me your prediction on who they take at eight. And if you have a strong feeling that they're going to be able to move up from 8 to 5, 6, whatever, go with that and tell me who you think they'll land.
I'll say this. If Brady Tkachuk is at 8, I would be shocked if they do not take him. And if he's off the board, I think they'll go Oliver Wahlstrom.
I think that they will attempt to trade up and not be able to do so because teams are going to want too much. So I think they stay at 8 and they take Noah Dobson. That's kind of been my gut.
Yeah, I'm with you on Noah Dobson. If Bouchard was there, I think they would absolutely take him. I think Hughes will end up going to Detroit. And if they end up going forward, I don't see Tkachuk falling to 8. So I would agree with you. Wahlstrom would be the pick if they go forward. Now, we've heard tons of rumors, guys. And, I mean, it is wide-ranging. Like, in some of it, we know the salary cap situation, and we know, like, a guy like what John Tavares is going to command on the open market, and still you're hearing his name being – I mean, who wouldn't be interested in Tavares? But anyways, You hear Tavares. You hear Pacioretty. You hear Erik Karlsson. You hear Falk, Trouba. Of all these things, is anything, do you have any clarity, anything that makes sense to you that you believe the Hawks could trade for or acquire via free agency?
Well, it's very weird because John Tavares is an unrestricted free agent this summer, and like all my attention is on Ottawa and Carolina. Like those are the two teams that can literally shake up the entire NHL, because John Tavares, when they hired Lou Lamoriello, it kind of seems like John Tavares is going to re-sign in New York. So that's kind of like to the back burner now. Like Carolina and Ottawa hold all the cards, because you figure Erik Karlsson's going to get traded. You figure Mike Hoffman's going to get traded. Carolina could potentially fire sale and just trade Justin Falk. Like Scott Darling is probably available. Like there's a lot of different directions you can go in. To me, I'm just like, I look at the Blackhawks and I look at Carolina. There's something that can be worked out there. I just can't figure out
why. Is it because we're always making trades in Carolina?
There's something there. There's the need for a backup goalie, Scott Darling. Can Carolina eat some of that salary? Sure. Oh, by the way, they could also take Marian Hossa's contract. Oh, the Blackhawks need a top defenseman. Oh, Justin Falk or Noah Hanifin. Like, something is there. I just can't pinpoint it. I don't know.
Hanifin,
I don't know how to do it.
Would be such a perfect fit for the Blackhawks. I just don't know if they'll be able to find the right. Cause like you said, you look at it on paper and you go, okay, there's a fit here. But then you look at it and you can go, oh my God, they can do a monster trade if they really wanted to put their heads together and come up with something that can help the Blackhawks right now and Carolina for whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish in the near future. I think Tavares obviously would be, you know, a huge addition, and they're going to have the cap space. They're, I think, just over $6 million now. So with Hossa's extra $5.5 million or so, or 5.75, whatever his cap hit would be, takes you to about 11-ish. You're expecting the cap to go up to 80. That's a $5 million gap. That takes you to 16.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, if you're just signing two players, that's enough to make two quality free agent signings. I don't think that they'll go that route.
Yeah,
I think
how do you re-sign to Brinken and Schmaltz after that?
I think you'll re-sign, or you'll sign as a free agent a second-tier kind of guy, someone that they can either maybe a bottom six forward, or if they think a guy like Cole is worth it as a free agent. But I think they're going to be extremely active in the trade market, whether that's with Carolina, whether that's with Ottawa, or Jacob Trouba is a really, really enticing name, but his agent is a madman. They want a lot of money. They've already held out once with Winnipeg, and they kind of remind me now with what they're going to have to do to re-sign Laine, what they're going to have to do eventually with Connor after his entry-level contract is up. Trouba might be the guy that just gets squeezed out because they need to keep all their own players. They're going to want a lot in a trade return because he's a restricted free agent, and then you're going to have to sign him to a really expensive deal.
What do you think, Trouba? So he made almost $3 million this year, 24 years of age. What do you think he commands as a restricted free agent?
He's asking for Drew Doughty money, so he wants $7 million or more.
Wow.
And for a guy who only scored three goals and...
Yeah, you know, I don't see the Hawks. That's too rich for the Hawks' blood.
Agreed, yeah. But
I'd rather give him that money, though, than John Carlson. Because you're getting a guy that's 4 years younger.
Yeah, and he's a little bit...
And
he Trouba's a little bit more of a stay-at-home defenseman, too.
Right.
He's kind of more of a stalwart, I guess, than Carlson. Carlson guy puts up the points. He's a power play asset, but... He's going to get more than $8 million on the free agent market.
The problem is you'd have to trade for Trouba, and Carlson is
right.
Just free. You know,
yeah.
Or, like, you don't have to give anything.
Erik Karlsson, though, is a perfect fit, too, but he's got 1 year left.
Let me ask you that. What – because, like, it's a dumpster fire in Ottawa. We know that. Mike Hoffman looks like he's gone. I don't know if that will appease Erik Karlsson with what he's gone through. I don't know. I mean, they've got so much going on there.
I think he's requested a trade. Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's
he's out.
So he wants out. Now, will they oblige? He's got the 1 year remaining at $6.5 million.
They're in a bad spot. They have no leverage.
Would you give up the 27th and a significant piece on the roster? And by that, I mean Hinostroza.
27 and Hinostroza, I'd take that chance easily.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to take eight?
Yeah. It's going to take a lot.
Okay. It's going to take 8, 27, maybe Saad. Yeah,
Would you do that for a one-year rental?
No. Unless it's guaranteed
but
that
here's
he'll
the
sign
thing.
An extension.
Well, that's the thing. Like,
it gives you a window for a year.
It gives you the window. It's like the Machado situation,
exactly,
right? It's like, hey, come to us, see what it's like. I mean, let's be honest. The Hawks go from a bottom third D-core to a top 10, top 8, top 5 with Erik Karlsson in the mix.
It totally changes things. And from what I understand, he's got a relationship with Erik Gustafsson from playing with Sweden or I don't know
all
how
those
much
Swedes
that,
are like a little fraternity.
I don't know, especially with the defenseman. I don't know how much that's going to help, you know, the Hawks' cause potentially. But man, you're right. All of a sudden, you look at the deep, and you're like, you know what? This ain't too bad.
Right. If they can't get him, are we in the like Justin Falk makes sense in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
and
like,
he's not going to cost you a
doesn't
ton.
Doesn't cost you a ton. Yeah. You got 2 years. He's 26. They're selling somewhat low on him because his numbers weren't great. The one thing, and you guys mentioned the Scott Darling situation. To me, I'm not getting Scott Darling unless I know that Corey Crawford is damaged goods, and I can't
otherwise
count on him to be my number one
for a backup goal.
Yeah, I just don't see that. And let's be honest, he had a horrible year.
Yeah,
and you can say all you want that it was a change of scenery. I don't know if I'm always going to go on the change of scenery, play the change of scenery card. He had an 880 save percentage.
Yeah, which is very bizarre because he was like,
he was statistically the worst goalie in the NHL.
Yeah, and he was coming off a season in which he hit was like one of the best 5-on-5 save percentages.
Some guys, though, they just aren't cut out to be the number one and play 60 games. Some guys are just meant to be the number two, give you 30 really good ones.
I don't know if it was that. I think it was the way Carolina played, which was kind of contradictory because right after the Scott Darling trade, I wrote that it was a perfect fit. Because and it was in theory, and I will not back down from what I wrote. But it was just it was just a very different system. Like, so I don't know. So would you not want Scott Darling because you don't see him as a backup, or you think he'll just get an opportunity elsewhere?
To me, at that price point, and I'm not convinced that they're going to eat part of that. I'm assuming that I have to eat 4.4 million or whatever he's making, 4.2. That's too much for a backup. I can't be spending $11 million on my goaltenders. I just can't with guys making $10.5 million, Kane and Taves. I just can't do it.
Well, what if Carolina eats like half the salary?
That doesn't happen very often in the NHL. There's not a lot of,
Carolina because they need it to get to the floor.
Yeah, unless you say they take Hossa or like,
too much.
I don't see them being that accommodating, but.
So that's what it comes down to. Either Justin Falk or Scott Darling, there's no way you're going to be able to get both, and there's no way you're going to be able to unload Hossa's contract to Carolina, like, if you don't. Like, I'm having a hard time putting pieces
together. I don't
feel
they need to unload his contract. They can put him on long-term IR. The only thing is they got to wait till the season starts.
Well, that's
it paralyzes you to a degree of, like, being aggressive in free agency, but you can still use that money. It's just you got to use it a little bit later.
I think the draw is that it frees it up now. You don't have to worry about the in-season putting them on long-term IR. And it's an asset to certain teams that need to make the salary cap floor.
True.
We saw that with the Datsyuk trade with the Coyotes a couple drafts ago. They're willing to take any contract to reach the floor, and you're getting pieces that they're hoping fill out their future just so they can take
and it's only
contract.
$1 million for the next 3 years in real money to Hossa. So they're not technically eating the 5 point whatever cap hit. It's really $3 million. That's
and
all there.
I think after 2 more seasons, if they want to buy him out, the buyout number is really low for Hossa. So if they want to keep it, it's still an asset to them in a way. They just, like you said, can't use the money in the same way if they were able to get rid of the contract now.
Right, and we're talking about the salary cap going up to $80 million. So
$5 million is a big jump.
$5 million is a big jump. So it's not like everyone sees this as like teams doing the Blackhawks a favor by getting – like that would be a big deal for Arizona if they're really struggling to get to the four. You know, so it's not like – I'm not saying the Hawks would be doing Arizona a favor, but, you know, there's a – it's not like the Hawks would have to attach like a Vinny Hinostroza to Arizona. Right. Please take, like, they'll be fine if they don't.
Last question.
Yeah.
A week from now, Friday after the first round, will the Hawks have made a significant trade like they did a year ago?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be to that magnitude, but if you told me like that they're going to make a shakeup, like I wouldn't be surprised.
I'd be surprised if they didn't make a significant trade.
Yeah, I think to me, you will see a trade to acquire what they believe is a top four D-man.
Let's put it this way, because this makes it more interesting. Do you think they'll make, because last year they made the move the day before the draft.
Right.
Do you think that the big move will come on draft day on Friday, or will they do it before?
I think they'll do it before, and I think one of those picks will be a part of it.
I agree there. One of those picks is gone. They're going to only take one player, either at 8 or at 27.
Yeah, if I was a betting man, I would say that the shakeup, or not the shakeup, a trade would happen on Friday, because I think they'll keep the 8, and I think they'll trade the 27. But I'm not sure, because how do you trade the 27th pick on the Thursday? Like, something would need to... I feel like the draft is going to unfold a certain way, and then these GMs are going to get on the floor saying, all right, well, we're ready to pull the trigger. We want 27 or whatever.
Well, we'll find out. Our thanks to Charlie Romeliotis, Slavko Bekovic. Guys, great job as always. NBC Sports Chicago. Charlie will be doing that podcast next week from Dallas. Our thanks as always. Our thanks to Mark Kelly, VP of Amateur Scouting. We're going to hear from Stan Bowman next week in Dallas as well. So make sure you... download the podcast next week as well. And thanks, as always, for listening to the Hawks Talk podcast, brought to you by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next week.